Well, the owner builder had spent the last year and a half renovating the house he had bought. He was going to move into it, but a change in his work situation meant that he could no longer live there, as his new workplace was a lot further away from the house that he was doing up. And not wanting to be bothered by tenants ringing up to change a light bulb or change a leaking tap washer, he decided he would go with a real estate agent to solve that problem of checking references and ensuring the tenants paid on time. He took photos of the house on his mobile so that he knew what condition the house was left in before the tenants moved in. And it wasn't long before the real estate agent had a short list of tenants that he could choose from and became highly recommended. The tenants moved in and the owner builder started receiving his rental payments. After 6 months, he received a building report and everything was fine according to the report. It was not long after this that he noticed on his accounts that they were a week behind in their rent payments. And so he phoned up the real estate agent and said, "Oh, it's nothing to worry about. It's been a tough month, but it'll be fine." So he let it go, thinking that they will catch up with the payment. When the next building report came through, the photos showed everything looking fine. In fact, there did not appear to be much wear and tear on the house at all. Nothing had changed from the previous report. And soon after that report, he received another rental payment, noting that another payment had been missed. And it wasn't long before the tenants were a month in arrears, then 2 months, and then 3 months. And then he got the phone call from the real estate agent to say the tenants had not paid rent again and were refusing to leave. I don't know whether anyone's been in that situation. Some of you may have. I know I have. Owning a house, it's not a good spot to be in. What do you do with tenants? Well, let's look at another rental story, one that Jesus tells, the parable of the tenants. And it's a simple story where a vineyard owner puts in share farmers to look after his vineyard. And he puts in tenants who will further establish that vineyard. And they are installed by the owner, and the owner is expecting a share of the profits in return. However, as we listen to the parable as Jesus tells it, the tenants decide not to give the owner any share at all. And finally, when the owner's son was sent into the vineyard, they beat him, kill him, and throw his body outside the vineyard. They did not care about the owner, or his son, or the servants the owner had sent. They only cared about themselves and what they could get out of this for themselves, which was not theirs anyway. Now, a story like this can make our blood boil at the injustice of what was taking place with the tenants. Tenants who thought they owned the property, tenants who thought they could do as they like, tenants who thought they could trash the vineyard without any repercussions upon them. And it would make you angry. It would infuriate you. It could bring on a whole range of feelings. And as we explore this story with Jesus and why did he tell it, we begin to see who Jesus is taking aim at in this story. Look at verse 19, if you've got the Bibles there in front of you. The teachers of the law and the chief priests looked for a way to arrest him immediately because they knew he had spoken this parable against them. They knew. They knew they were the guilty ones. They knew they were the tenants in the vineyard Jesus was taking aim at. And when we fit this story in, there are other things that come into play as well. In the scriptures, God's people, Israel, are often referred to as God's vineyard. We see that in Isaiah. If you read Isaiah chapter 5, verses 1 to 7, you see there God plants a vineyard. And if we're looking for an owner builder, then there is no need to go any further because God is that owner builder. He established a vineyard for his people. And when God installed his people in that vineyard, there was the expectation of something in return. Praise, honour, glory. And so God sent his servants, the prophets, to remind the people of what was expected of a tenant in his vineyard. And you might think this is a crazy place to go to, Look at 2 Chronicles. 2 Chronicles? What has that got to do with this parable of the tenants? 2 Chronicles chapter 35, verses 15 to 16, and we'll pick up this again next week when we look at a very different book. But what we read in 2 Chronicles 35 is this. The Lord, the God of their fathers, sent word to them through his messengers again and again because they had pity on his people and on his dwelling place. But they mocked God's messengers, despised his words, and scoffed at his prophets until the wrath of the Lord was aroused against his people and there was no remedy. Time and time again, God sent his messengers, God sent his servants, God sent his prophets, and they didn't listen. They kept persecuting the messengers, the prophets, until finally God sends his own son, Jesus Christ, to the tenants, and the tenants put him to death. And in one sense, you could say that servants sent by God are the modern-day debt collectors, simply collecting what they owed to the owners. And the tenants are trying to get away without giving anything to the rightful owner. While the people of Jesus' day might not have had tollways or credit cards, debt, they could relate to a vineyard owner who put in tenants to work and maintain the vineyard, and then the tenants refused to pay and pass on what the profits were to the owner. So why did Jesus tell this story when he did? What purpose does the particular story serve? Why is it here? Should we take notice of it in Wyndham 2018? Well, let's look at the context of this parable, which we've been doing with each of the parables we looked at. What comes before the story? In Luke 19, we have had Jesus' triumphant entry into Jerusalem. Jesus goes to the temple expecting to find prayer, but only finds thieves. And then, as Jesus is teaching, his authority is questioned by the religious leaders. Chief priests, teachers of the law, the elders, all questioned what authority he had to do what he was doing. And then when Jesus challenged them with a question concerning John the Baptist, they backed off. They were questioning his authority, he was questioning their authority. And then we have the incident where it was questioned about whether they should pay taxes to Caesar. So once again, a question of authority comes into play. Does Caesar have the authority? Have those coins? Who has the authority? And if Caesar has authority over the coin, then why haven't they recognised that authority and the authority in the vineyard as well? God owns the vineyard, but they hadn't recognised God's authority. They'll be in trouble if they mess with Caesar's authority. What sort of trouble do you think they'd get into if they mess with God's authority? So in between Jesus' authority and being questioned and Caesar's authority stands this parable of the tenants. And here was a group of tenants claiming authority as if they had owned the vineyard itself. So Jesus tells the story to show who has the authority. There's also a bigger context. And that bigger story has to do, and you go to any of the Gospels for this, but in the Gospel of Luke, it highlights the fact that there is a king coming, Jesus Christ, seeking to come and collect what is rightfully his. Now the parable speaks at a couple of levels. There's the level at which Jesus told the parable for the express purpose of pointing out to the tenants, who are in fact God's people, particularly the leadership, they've refused to acknowledge God in anything they have done. We see that in verse 19, which I read earlier. The teachers of the law and the chief priests looked for a way to arrest him immediately because they knew he had spoken the parable against them. Strange. They're afraid of the people. They didn't take any action because they were afraid of the people. It's a pity they weren't afraid of God. But they were afraid of the people. Instead of giving God the glory and honour, they usurped it for themselves. Notice in verse 10, the owner was not after all the fruit of the harvest, simply after some of it. And yet the tenants refused to give the owner any. At harvest time, he sent a servant to the tenants so that they would give him some of the fruit of the vineyard. It wasn't after all of it, just some of it. They wouldn't even give that to him. So what fruit is being looked for? I think we get a glimpse of that in Matthew's Gospel. In the Sermon on the Mount, where it talks about the actions of the righteous. Be careful not to do your acts of righteousness before men, to be seen by them. If you do, you will have no reward from your Father in heaven. So when you give to the needy, do not announce it with trumpets, as the hypocrites do in the synagogues and in the streets, to be honoured by men. I tell you the truth, they have received their reward in full. And you go on reading that in Matthew's Gospel, Matthew chapter 6. The same words are repeated. God is looking for some fruit. They were not doing their actions to please God. They were doing it to look good in front of man. What ought they have done? The same thing we should do. Give God the honour and the glory. So we've seen at one level at which this story is understood. And those who heard that understood it quite well. They knew he was pointing at them. There's also another level to look at this. Now, at the risk of sounding like a Greens candidate, go to Genesis 1. What's the other level that comes into play there? We are the tenants who have been put here on planet Earth. Genesis 1:26. Then God said, "Let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock and over all the earth and over all the creatures that move along the ground." So God created the earth and the garden, and who did he put on it? He put us there to look after it, to look after planet Earth. And when a tenant does not look after the property or falls behind in the rent, what should happen to them? Well, Jesus said they should be thrown out. Where would we be thrown to? I mean, I know there are plans to send manned spaceships to Mars. If we can't look after planet Earth, what are we going to do with Mars? Yeah, we'll make a mess of that as well. If we can't get to Mars, where's God going to put us? Well, there is another place, and that's hell. So we need to be careful of that one as well. And so he removes the tenants. As he states, the tenants are about to get the same treatment they gave to the servants that God had sent. Look at verse 13. Then the owner of the vineyard said, "What shall I do? I will send my son, whom I love. Perhaps they will respect him." But then when the servants saw him, they talked the matter over. "This is the heir," they said. "Let's kill him, and the inheritance will be ours." So they threw him out of the vineyard and killed him. Well, God's going to do the same thing that they did to the son. And to the servants that he kept on sending. So it's no mere coincidence that in the telling of this story, Jesus quotes a psalm, Psalm 118. It's the same psalm the people would have quoted a few days earlier. "Blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord. Peace in heaven and glory in the highest." They would have been shouting on the triumphal entry. Psalm 118 speaks of the coming king, the coming Messiah. The people praise the very fact that the king is coming. Yet Jesus points out to them what will happen if they reject the king who comes in the name of the Lord. They will be crushed by this king if they do not pay attention to him. Psalm 118:28-29 states, "You are my God and I will give you thanks. You are my God and I will exalt you. Give thanks to the Lord for he is good. His love endures forever." That's the response we ought to have. But it's the response these tenants did not give. And as we look at this parable, there are four rejections that we need to heed in this story. First is the rejection of God's word. And you might say, well, God's word is not mentioned here. It is. Remember back in 2 Chronicles, chapter 35, the verses I read out there. What were the messengers bringing to the people? Time and time again, those messengers were sent. What was the word that was given? It was God's word. And they kept on rejecting it. So he sent messenger after messenger to his people. He sent prophet after prophet to his people. They paid no attention. God sent preacher after preacher to the city of Wyndham. How many heeded God's word that was given? How many took notice of it? God sent preacher after preacher to Good News Lutheran College. Preacher after preacher to Heathdale Christian College. Preacher after preacher to church after church. How many paid attention to God's word? Where are we in the story? You might want to ponder that. Have you heeded God's word when it's been given, when it's been sent? Or will you be like the tenant and reject the messengers from God? There is a second rejection that takes place, and that's the rejection of God's goodness. If you have tenants in your rental property and they trashed it and did not pay the rent, what action would you take? Would you say, oh, that doesn't matter, you can stay there? Or would you toss them out? Throw them out? And before you say God does the same thing, throw them out, how long did it take God to throw them out? God sent messenger after messenger, prophet after prophet. He didn't throw them out just like that. He was patient with them. He displayed his goodness to them. And that they kept on refusing the messengers. Time and time again those messengers came. How long was God patient with you before you came to Christ? You might want to share that over a cuppa. Go up and ask Harry, Harry, how long was God patient with you before you turned to Christ? How many messengers did you reject before you did decide? You might want to ponder that. So that's two rejections, the rejection of God's word and the rejection of God's goodness, his patience, his grace towards us. There is a third rejection, and that is the rejection of God's judgment. And there are plenty of people around today who hold to the view that God, well, he's a loving God. He would not send people to hell, particularly good people he would not send to hell. And I'm a good person. Well, hell is going to be filled with good people. Let's get that straight. Good people won't make it into heaven. We need to be clear on that. The people are rejecting God's judgment. The tenants, they've just killed the son. And Jesus is about to say what the vineyard owner will do to the tenants. What then will that owner of the vineyard do to them? He will come and kill those tenants and give the vineyard to others. When the people heard this, they said, may it never be. They were denying the fact that they would face the judgment. In their eyes, they had done nothing wrong, that they were okay. Why should they be judged? You know, we're good people. We've kept the law. I was born a Jew of the tribe of Judah, or Paul would say the tribe of Benjamin. Surely God's not going to judge me. Circumcised on the eighth day, Paul would say. Paul would argue all that. But he'd say it doesn't matter. When people try to tell you that God is a loving God and that he will judge, not judge, be aware there's a false prophet lurking somewhere. Have you rejected the God who's going to judge? If you have, then just maybe you're making a God of your own making, a God of your own choosing. So there's the rejection of God's word. There's the rejection of the prophets, the messengers. There's the rejection of God's goodness. There's the rejection of judgment. But then there's also the rejection of God's kingdom. If you look at Psalm 118, which Jesus quotes, you get the picture of a coming kingdom. And yet the tenants reject what Jesus is saying. Jesus looked directly at them and asked, then what is the meaning of that which is written? The stone the builders rejected has become the capstone. Everyone who falls on the stone will be broken to pieces, but he on whom it falls will be crushed. The tenants reject the coming kingdom at their peril. If you compare what Jesus is saying to what is written in Isaiah 8 or Daniel 2, it talks about kingdoms that are coming and they will crush anyone in their road. You look up Isaiah 8 for that, Daniel chapter 2. Jesus once again warning the wayward tenants not to reject the fact that the kingdom is coming. If you do reject it, then you will be crushed by that kingdom that's coming, the kingdom of Jesus Christ. And so you can ask yourself whether you've rejected God's word from his messengers. Have you spurned God's goodness to you? He has been patient and patient and patient. Have you rejected the fact that God will judge? Have you rejected the coming kingdom with Jesus Christ as its king? Or maybe will you joyfully take part in that coming kingdom because you have heeded God's word. You've rejoiced in his goodness and grace. You've heeded the coming judgment and kingdom. What's our response to this creator God who is the owner and creator of planet Earth? How do we show our thanks to such a God? God has placed us on this planet. How should we be treating the home he has given us? I want to give one final thing on this. I was challenged a few weeks back by one of our members How do you turn this conversation here into a spiritual one? If you have a friend round for a meal or a barbecue, and you say to them, did you see A Current Affair last night? Some tenant trashed a house and the owners could not get them out. Now, I can understand why the tenant left the place in such a mess and did not obey the tenant laws. And your friend that you've got round for that barbecue would think, are you crazy? They should be thrown out. What do you mean you can understand how they trashed the house? They should be made to clean it up and then live in a tent for the rest of their lives. That's your friend saying that to you. And then you respond, that's one way of looking at it. But you know what? I've treated God the same way. He's given me a place to live, a family to enjoy, fellowship with, and yet I've made a mess of it. But I'm glad God in his goodness and grace keeps reaching out to me. You're going to have a friend around for a barbecue soon? You might want to use that on them and see what they say. Where are you in the story? Are you the tenant who has messed up, who's ignored the servants God has sent to you time after time? Are you rejoicing in God's goodness that he's placed you in that vineyard?